Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Affirmative action in university admissions is again on trial in an American courtroom. A Massachusetts federal court is currently hearing a case that alleges that Harvard University discriminates against highly qualified Asian American students. The allegation is that the best and the brightest aren't getting in because Harvard uses race as one of many factors in its admissions process. So the plaintiffs want all mention of race removed from applications, totally race blind, meaning that this case is really about ending affirmative action. The man behind the case has tried before, and he's taken his argument all the way to the United States Supreme Court in 2013, where this current Harvard case is very likely to end up as well. So this hour on Point, affirmative action in higher education on trial. And you can join us. Do you think that any mention of race should be removed from college applications? How does that gel with or clash with the university's overall mission? And if race shouldn't be a factor, what about athletics or legacy admissions? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org, on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, this case has engendered a lot of strong feelings in and around the Harvard University. In fact, there have been rallies both in support and against the case. So let's hear a little bit about that. At a Boston rally on Sunday in support of Students for Fair Admissions, that's the group that has brought this lawsuit against Harvard, one student spoke of her support of SFFA to local television station WCVB.
Whether or not you support affirmative action, I think it's an important time to be critical of Harvard and to look at how affirmative action policies have impacted or discriminated against Asian American communities, keeping Asian American numbers down by consistently scoring us lower on personal ratings.
On the other hand, here's what Jang Lee, a Harvard senior who supports the university, here's what Jang says about the lawsuit that's been brought by Edward Bloom.
I think, like, angry and, like, frustrated because, like, there's this, like, white guy saying that he supports, like, Asian Americans, their agenda, when actually if you look at his track record, it's very clear that he does not care about Asian Americans or people of color.
Well, joining us now is Max Larkin. He's a multimedia reporter for Edify, WBUR's education team, and he's been covering this case. It's called Students for Fair Admissions, Inc. versus Harvard. And Max Larkin joins us now from Boston Federal Court. Welcome to On Point, Max.
Hi, Meghna.
So first of all, can you just tell us in a little bit of detail here, what exactly is Students for Fair Admissions? What are they alleging that Harvard does?
Well, they're alleging first on the basis of numbers, Meghna. You have an increasing number of Asian American applicants. These candidates are generally the strongest when you break it down by race or ethnic group when it comes to pure academic performance. And yet that hasn't translated into a commensurate increase in the number of Asian American students they admit. So that's the ground fact. They would say that this is evidence of racial balancing, which the Supreme Court has already said is unlawful. You can't do it. And so that's the central contention. And then there are a lot of wrinkles to the way they see that playing out and see Harvard achieving that goal.
Okay, well, let's talk about one of those wrinkles there, because you heard it in one of the clips that we just played, that there's the allegation that, for example, scoring students on character, which is one of the factors that Harvard uses, that the plaintiffs allege that they score Asian Americans lower on character. Why is that?
Well, I mean, if you do a strict analysis, the judge ordered 6 years of this relatively shadowy sort of black box admissions data to be disclosed to both sides. And they did find that personal ratings tend to be a good bit lower for Asian American applicants. Now, you could have a lot of different theories about why that might be. SFFA is in court alleging that there's some sort of systematic thing going on at the level of the admissions officers who are reading these applications, who are projecting racial bias, implicit or explicit, onto Asian candidates. Back in the 90s, the OCR, the Office for Civil Rights at the Department of Education, looked into Harvard's policies, very similar allegations, and found that there were kind of stereotypical comments that were discussed in court yesterday saying, oh, this Asian student, very good at math, not so good at English or very shy or wants to be a doctor like so many other people in that racial group. And so that's an awkward moment for Harvard to have to explain. And now, yeah.
Right. Well, so those particular characterizations of certain Asian American applicants were put to William Fitzsimmons, right? The Harvard's long-serving dean of admissions, who was on the stand yesterday. The attorney for students for fair admissions read those, if I understand it correctly, read those quotes to him. How did Fitzsimmons respond?
Fitzsimmons is sort of like a legendary figure at Harvard. He's been the admissions officer since 1986. He was a first-generation Harvard college undergraduate, too, back in the 60s. And he seems sort of bemused by the line of questioning. He's kept his cool, even though he's faced some pretty stiff questioning. And he said, yeah, we got that report. It was a real warning sign for us. We imbibed the lessons from it. We thought a lot about how to prevent that from ever happening again. We abhor stereotypes. And he added, which is true, that that report back in the 90s found no structural wrongdoing. So a few awkward remarks in a generally lawful admission system.
Now, we should underscore that Harvard University has consistently denied that there's any discrimination against Asian American students. And a little later this hour, we're going to hear a conversation that I had with Harvard's current president about that. But Max, I mean, check me on this here. There's a group, Students for Fair Admissions, who's arguing on behalf of Asian American students. But this case was really the brainchild of Edward Bloom. Now, here, this is a conservative activist who has tried multiple times to bring lawsuits regarding affirmative action to U.S. courts. In 2013, it went all the way to the Supreme Court in Fisher v. Texas. So is this really about Asian American discrimination, or is it about ending affirmative action?
Yeah, I think there are questions to ask about the good faith on both sides of this case. Now, Adam Mortara, who gave the opening statement for SFFA, came out and said, listen, the future of affirmative action is not on trial here. Diversity is not on trial here. The people on the other side of this lawsuit, namely Asian American students at Harvard that defend diversity at Harvard groups, say that's not the case. They've got buttons that say not your wedge. In a sense, they're saying we don't want to see Asian Americans used as a pretext, a legal pretext to achieve here what Bloom failed to achieve in Fisher v. Texas, namely the total eradication of racial consideration in college admissions.
Mm. Well, Max Larkin is multimedia reporter for Edify. That's WBUR's education team, and he's covering the Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard trial from Boston Federal Court. Max, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
All right. Well, so let's get a little deeper into this debate and this question about what this case is really about. Joining us now is Peter Wood. He is president of the National Association of Scholars, a nonprofit advocacy network of scholars and citizens that focuses on education and has opposed racial preferences in admission policies since its founding in 1988. They have filed an amicus brief in this case, and he joins us from New York. Peter Wood, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
Also joining us today is Nicole Gon-Ochi. She is supervising attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice, the Los Angeles Impact Litigation Unit. And her law firm is representing students who are testifying in support of Harvard's admissions policy. Nicole Gon-Ochi, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me, Meghna.
So, Peter Wood, first, let me just start with you. I'm going to ask the same question that I asked of Max Larkin just a second ago. What is this case really about?
The case is really about ending discrimination against Asian students at Harvard, and the case that Harvard is discriminating against them is very strong. That it may have other fallout effects in the long run is true, but that's not what the case is about.
Okay. I want to just play some tape here from Edward Bloom. He is sort of the animating force behind this case. And as I mentioned earlier, he helped bring Fisher v. Texas to the Supreme Court in 2013. He spoke to CBS Boston on Sunday at a Boston rally supporting his lawsuit against Harvard University.
Harvard has held Asian Americans to a different academic standard than African Americans, Hispanics, and whites. So during the last 4 years that we've gathered our evidence, we think that that evidence is compelling. And we've asked the courts to compel Harvard to stop this discrimination.
So Edward Bloom there, just a couple of days ago, talking about what he sees as discrimination in Harvard's admissions practices. But in 2015, in April of 2015, Edward Bloom spoke before the Houston Chinese Alliance, and he talked about what his goals are with these cases that he's trying to bring to the United States Supreme Court. Here he is in 2015.
That's the goal of these lawsuits, is to eliminate the consideration of race or ethnicity in applying. So, I needed plaintiffs. I needed Asian plaintiffs. And finding plaintiffs to challenge the Ivy League admissions policies, Harvard in particular, is not an easy thing to do. So I started, designed three websites, harvardnotfair.org, UNC, University of North Carolina, notfair.org, and UWnotfair.org, University of Wisconsin.
That's Edward Bloom in April 2015. So Peter Wood, I mean, there he is saying he was looking for plaintiffs for a case against Harvard to eliminate the consideration of race or ethnicity in applications.
That's what he hopes will happen in the long run, and it's what I hope will happen in the long run as well, but it's not what the case is about. We're dealing with a particular legal issue in particular circumstances right here and now, and that's about trying to get fair treatment of Asian applicants at Harvard.
Nicole Gonocchi, we've got about 40 seconds before we have to take a quick break here. Would you like to respond to that?
Sure. So I think the important thing here is to look at the remedy, and the remedy that was sought in the complaint and the remedy that still apparently is being sought is the complete elimination of race in the admissions process, which would be the end of affirmative action at Harvard and wouldn't address any discrimination against Asian Americans.
Okay, so we're going to pick this up when we come back. We're talking about this case currently pending. It's brought by Students for Fair Admissions Incorporated. It's versus Harvard University's admissions practices right now, alleging discrimination against Asian American students, but really perhaps seeking an end to racial consideration in all college applications. So what do you think about that? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard. It's a federal court case going on right now that alleges that Harvard University may discriminate against Asian American students. But a lot of people are looking at this case saying, really, what's on trial is affirmative action. And we're joined today by Peter Wood. He's president of the National Association of Scholars. They're a group that filed an amicus brief this summer in support of Students for Fair Admissions. And we're also joined by Nicole Gonocchi. She's a supervising attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice. And Nicole Gonocchi, you just got a quick hit there right at the end of the previous segment. So pick up on your thought. I mean, what do you see this case really as? And do you see any credence or any evidence that Harvard discriminates against Asian Americans as the plaintiffs are alleging?
Sure. So, as an Asian American civil rights lawyer that fights discrimination and racism against Asian Americans every day in a variety of contexts, of course, I would be concerned about discrimination against Asian Americans in Harvard's admissions process. Now, the claim here is intentional discrimination. And while I do see that there is some negative effect on Asian Americans in the admissions process based on the data that I have seen, I do not think that it is at all related to the consideration of race in the admissions process, nor do I think that it is intentional discrimination. I think there is a disparate impact for Asian Americans due to legacies and other preferences that predominantly benefit white privileged applicants. And I also don't think Asian Americans are alone in experiencing the disparate impact of those policies.
But can I just jump in here? Because the plaintiffs allege that they see evidence in the thousands of pages of documents that have been released during discovery in this trial, that they see evidence that of discrimination or at least bias against Asian American students in one of the four factors that that Harvard uses in admissions. They look at academics, they look at extracurricular, they look at athletics, and they look at this thing called personal, which is character. And it's in that personal category that they say Harvard shows a pattern of marking down Asian American students for no real reason other than perhaps bias.
Sure. So let me address the personal score issue. I think there's a number of things to consider about the personal score. So first, statistically, they're saying that Asian Americans are consistently rated lower on the personal score. But that's because of how they organize the data. So they organize the data by academic decile, which is 99% based on SAT scores and GPA. And they're saying that the students in the highest decile who are, Asian American or whatever, they're getting lower personal scores than other racial groups. But I think that it's a mistake to organize that data by academic decile because it doesn't necessarily correlate. Just because someone, anyone, Asian American or otherwise, scores high on their SATs doesn't mean that their application is demonstrating all of these personal qualities. And so actually, if you don't organize it by academic decile, then there is no statistically significant difference.
Okay. Peter Wood, let me turn back to you and sort of step back here for big picture. Because twice in terms of when affirmative action has been taken all the way to the United States Supreme Court, in 1978 in the Bakke case and in 2003 in Gratz v. Bollinger, Harvard's admission processes have actually been highlighted by the justices as the way to use racial factors in admissions, as the right way to use racial factors in admissions, and that it's not a deciding factor because there are many thousands of qualified applicants, but it could be a factor that's used in the entire mix here. It was held up as the right way to do it. So what's the problem now that you see?
Well, first of all, the Bakke case in 1978 was a fractured opinion. The court split 4-4-1. The one was Lewis Powell, and Lewis Powell was the only one who looked to Harvard and thought that its approach to diversity ought to be compelling. No other justice agreed with him at that point. That remained in the category of Supreme Court dicta all the way to 2003, when in the Grutter case, Sandra Day O'Connor decided to resurrect Powell's eccentric opinion and make it the law of the land. So now, yes, the Supreme Court has in that instance said that the pursuit of diversity, taking some account of racial preferences, would be a suitable thing that colleges and universities could do, not that they had to do it, but that they could do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where the law stands on this. It was reaffirmed in the Fisher case a few years ago. What's at stake here is what's been at stake all along, which is should the United States be a country that upholds the law of the land, that is Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that no person in the United States shall, on the grounds of race, color, or national origin, be excluded from participation in or denied the benefits to be subjected to discrimination under any program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. As far as ending affirmative action, we could say that Harvard does have other options. It could take the option of saying we no longer want to receive federal aid. therefore we're willing to put our money aside in order to discriminate because we like to discriminate. Another option is that Harvard, which has an endowment now of $39.1 billion, could expand in a manner that could accommodate the students who are qualified and rightly belong in as admitted students.
Nicole Garnochu, want to give you a chance to respond to that?
Sure. So I do want to push back against this notion that Asian Americans are definitively being discriminated against. And I want to do that by sort of talking about the admissions process. So I think it is a fiction that every other score or every other consideration in the admissions process is objective. And I think there's a lot of research that establishes that, that SAT scores and grades, even extracurricular activities to some extent, systematically penalize Black and Latino students, and some subgroups of Asian American students as well. And so I think to sort of look at the admissions process and to look at the personal score as the only one that could be potential to bias is incorrect, because all of these factors are imperfect. All of them, to some extent, are vulnerable to implicit, explicit bias. In the case of SAT scores, systematic discrimination against certain, racial groups. And so I don't think that the remedy for any of this is to eliminate the consideration of race, but it is actually to have race consciousness. And a lot of scholars would tell you that the way to remedy discrimination is to consider race and to make sure that these that racial groups aren't treated unfairly compared to each other.
Okay, so I want to take a step back here and actually bring in the voice of Harvard University itself, because back in July, I had a chance to sit down with Harvard President Larry Bacow right at the beginning of his presidency at Harvard. And we had a long conversation. We'll link to that whole conversation at onpointradio.org. But I'm going to play an excerpt here for you, because I began by asking Larry Bacow, again, Harvard's president, about what he sees as the overall mission of Harvard's admissions process and is and what it should be. And here's what Bacow said.
The admissions process should try to construct a class to bring together a group of students in a residential learning environment which optimizes the opportunity for them to learn not just from the faculty, but from each other. And diversity is an important component of that, because we learn from our differences. And so we focus not just on a narrow definition, but a broad definition of excellence. The vast majority of students who apply are extraordinarily accomplished academically. So we look for excellence in other dimensions. We look for broad intellectual interests across a range of fields. That's one kind of diversity that we seek. We seek students who come from broad socioeconomic backgrounds. We seek students who are geographically diverse. Mm-hmm. We seek students who are ethnically diverse. Having all sorts of students come together is the function of our admissions process.
Nobody takes exception with that. But when you look at the specifics of some of the things that have been brought forth in this lawsuit against Harvard, there is the question about, is Harvard going about creating that community in the right way? I mean, in recent court documents revealed that Harvard, the admissions office, uses a personality score as part of the overall suite of things that they look at with students, and that it seems as if Harvard has consistently given lower personality scores to Asian American applicants. I mean, on things like kindness, courage, likability.
That's an allegation which we would dispute, and we believe that the facts established at trial will prove otherwise. There have been hundreds of thousands of documents that have been poured through at this point. There is not a single one which suggests that there is a policy to discriminate against anybody or to hold one group to a different standard than anybody else. We don't do that.
Well, in 2013, Harvard itself conducted an internal investigation of its admissions policies and found to a certain extent that there may actually be a bias against Asian American applicants. And let me just give an example here. The report found that if admissions were based on academics, extracurricular activities, and personalities, that Asian Americans should be making up 26% of the student body.
And if you read that full memo, one of the things which it says is the introduction to it says that this is incomplete and it was based not on a full review of all the data. And in fact, if you take a look at the report that David Card, who's one of the foremost economists of his generation, has done, who's our expert in the case, looking at 6 years of data, complete data, not the limited data that was reviewed in an incomplete and draft report, the statistics and the data show a different conclusion. Hmm.
What's stopping a university like Harvard from saying explicitly that in order to fulfill this overall holistic mission of admissions, we cannot and will not be accepting the most academically accomplished students who apply?
So when you frame the question as admitting the most academically qualified, who is the most academically qualified? By what criterion or criteria are you going to judge them? And here our admissions staff has had literally hundreds of years of experience to understand who succeeds and who doesn't. And so merely focusing on one or two metrics doesn't give you a full picture on who's likely to thrive.
Yeah. Point taken. But since you mentioned the hundreds of years of experience, you also would fully acknowledge that there have been imperfect parts of that history. I mean, it was in the 20s and 30s that Harvard used justifications around personality and character as a means to keep out Jewish applicants.
Correct. And if you go back and look at that record, there was an explicit policy articulated by one of my predecessors to do that. Nobody has suggested that we're trying to keep out any ethnic group out of Harvard. To the contrary. And of all the records that people have poured through in this case, there is zero evidence of that, nothing. In fact, the decisions are made by a group of 40 people, one person, one vote, all voting on each case, with a fair number of Asian American admissions officers voting along with everybody else at the same time.
That's Harvard University President Larry Bacow. I spoke with him back in July, and that's an excerpt of our extended conversation. You can get a link to the whole conversation at onpointradio.org. Peter Wood, you heard President Bacow there saying explicitly that Harvard does not discriminate against anyone, in his view, and he believes court documents bear that out, but that more importantly, the holistic mission of the university itself requires to have a diverse student body, all of whom are academically qualified to be at Harvard. I mean, look, for the class of 2022, there were 47,000 people who applied to Harvard University. The admissions rate was 4.59%, meaning that there were thousands of academically qualified kids who didn't get in. I mean, I don't think anyone's saying that those who do get in shouldn't be there.
Well, it may well be that some who do get in shouldn't be there. I don't know that. But the defense that President Bacow gives, I think, is very sketchy. He doesn't know the details of how that process works, that Harvard is wise enough not to put down on a piece of paper, yes, we are going to discriminate against Asians, is no evidence that they aren't discriminating against Asians. We learned from testimony on Monday that Harvard has a policy of actually inviting applications from students from rural areas around the country, and that policy excludes Asians. They will invite all sorts of people to invite, but they won't invite Asians. That, on its face, is a discriminatory
policy. How does that exclude Asians? I don't follow.
They designate certain states and certain rural areas around the country as places that are underrepresented in the student makeup of Harvard. They identify students in those areas and invite them to apply. That policy explicitly excludes inviting Asians from those rural areas.
So you're saying that it's written in the policy that don't invite Asian students from rural areas?
Well, we don't know if it's written in the policy, but we know that the director of admissions, Mr. Fitzsimmons, testified on Monday of this week that that's how the policy works.
Does it work that way because perhaps the percentage of students in those rural areas is the percentage of Asian students is just lower? I mean, because some would say that geographic diversity in admissions processes is one that favors white students.
It definitely favors white students to the extent that it excludes Asian students. But as to there being a dearth of Asian students in rural parts of the country, that's just not true.
But I don't see how you're – I guess what I'm seeing is you're alleging that there's an explicit policy for Harvard – that Harvard has to exclude Asian students or exclude invitation to Asian students in rural areas. But is there proof of that? I'm not quite sure. I'm hearing you say there's proof of that.
Well, unless the dean, Fitzsimmons, perjured himself, the proof of it is that he says that's how it works. This is the New York Times on October 15th. Harvard University's dean of admissions testified in federal court on Monday that in the interest of attracting a diverse student body, the school lowers its recruiting standards a bit for many students from rural regions, but not if they are Asian Americans.
Okay, so Nicole Gonocchi, then we have, again, just a minute to go here before the break, but respond to what Peter Wood just said.
Sure. So I am not, I guess, I haven't looked at all of the evidence that came out on Monday related to the recruitment practices. But again, I don't think that has anything to do with the positive consideration of race in the admissions process. And I also think that the remedy that is being sought here, completely eliminating consideration of race, is completely impractical.
Hmm. Well, we will get to callers when we come back because I know there's a lot of folks who want to have their say on this. We're talking about a federal court case against Harvard University's admissions practices seeking to remove race from any consideration in university admissions. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about race and college admissions processes once again on trial, currently in a federal court case against Harvard University. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us. Let's go right to them. Mohammed is calling from New York, New York. Mohammed, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. And hi, Meghna.
Hi there.
Really love your program. I'm calling with this comment, and I have a question at the end. And a comment is that in my sphere, where I live here in New York City, I've worked in a newsroom for my career. I'm retired now. And I see the school system in this city, public versus the exceptional schools, as apartheid structured. And the other part of this comment is that when you look at the African-American community and the history of African-Americans in this country, that African-Americans have like a 400-year deficit in pursuing equity in this country. And that's reflected in our schools. If you go into most of the public schools in this city of New York, you don't see Asians and whites.
So, Mohammed, are you saying that you believe affirmative action is needed then to level that field, to right historical inequities?
Yes, I do. And I think that Asians, Americans who are dissatisfied with their percentage at Harvard have their heads in the sand. At Harvard, less than 15% of the student body is African-American.
Well, Mohammed, let me take it back from you on that point, and forgive me for interrupting, but there are a lot of voices who want to join us, so I very much appreciate your call. Let's get a different perspective from DJ, who's calling from Norwich, Connecticut. DJ, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me on. As far as affirmative action goes, you know, I think a lot of implicit bias has to do with some of these things. I mean, yes, if it wasn't for affirmative action, some things would have never been able to take place but it doesn't, and the race balancing, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's all for the good. You know, I grew up in Palm Beach County, Florida, and me being African-American myself, I went through some of this during high school and elementary school where I couldn't go to the school right there in my community. I had to be bused way over here because there wasn't any black students going over there. And my sister's father went through the same thing and during the 80s, late 70s, where it was actually, it got to be very violent and things of that nature. And I mean, it has a double-sided coin, you know? And as far as like with the Asian Americans with Harvard, I think it has to, with the, as far as like some of the personal criteria that need to be met in order to get into the school, I think that it has to do with the fact that from my experience and from a lot of other people's experience that I know about, the Asian community, they're not very inclusive. And so I think that may have something to do with the about the personal effect. But at the same time, I think that is a testament to how well-versed they are and how much they are all about their academics as opposed to some of us others.
Okay, DJ, I'm going to take it back from you there. Thank you so much for your call. Nicole Gonocchi, let me just go to you quickly because even though I feel like... DJ was talking about his experience as an African-American male in this country. He also then sort of made some presumptions about the Asian-American community as well. I just wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
Sure. I don't really agree with DJ that as a group, Asian Americans are not very inclusive or, you know, are more about academics than anything else. I think that is a stereotype. And I think that kind of establishes why we need the policies like affirmative action, because our country is so segregated that people don't have the opportunity to interact with each other and to break down those stereotypes. And that is one of the points of considering race in the admissions process and to have a diverse student body in colleges is so that these barriers can be broken down. And what you heard from DJ was probably the result of him not actually having that many interactions with Asian Americans along the lines of what Mohammed said, that there is an apartheid system in our public schools.
So, Peter Wood, let me turn back to you here because I just want to get down, and I'm going to ask this question of Nicole as well, but she's already spoken about how she believes diversity is part of what's core to an essential experience on American college campus. But if you were to have your druthers, what would be the basis upon which colleges and universities in America admit students?
It would admit students on the basis of proven ability, aptitude, determination, self-discipline, the qualities that make for someone who can undertake a rigorous college curriculum and the full range of things that go on in college and live them to the maximum.
Aren't those determination, et cetera, aren't those very subjectively measured, though?
Well, they can be subjectively measured, but there are certainly objective qualities involved in it as well. Students who do well in their academics through grade school and high school and who have transcripts showing that they've excelled in the courses that are available to them and have gone beyond those courses are showing a determination that is not just a matter of somebody's subjective opinion about it, but is actually illustrated in their lives lived up to that point.
Okay. Because I keep going back to what Edward Bloom, the man who's really the force behind this case, what he said in 2015, that he said the goal of these lawsuits is to eliminate the consideration of race in applications. So he needed plaintiffs. He needed Asian plaintiffs. Now Edward Bloom has a long history of, again, bringing cases against affirmative action to the Supreme Court. He also challenged the 1965 Voting Rights Act in Shelby County v. Holder and won that case at the Supreme Court, getting the court to overturn a very key part of the Voting Rights Act. So he's been focused on race a lot in America. But what about, Harvard uses athletics as part of its admissions processes. Why should athletes have twice as much chance to get into Harvard as anybody else? What does that have to do with, you know, their merit there? Or what about legacy admissions? Why not bring a case against students who may have a leg up simply because they had a family member who went to Harvard University? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of other issues apart from race that separate the haves and the have-nots in the way Harvard admits students.
Well, Harvard may be making doubtful decisions when it comes to the preferences it gives for legacies and for people in athletics, But those are decisions that a private university or a public one, for that matter, are free to make.
So why can't they make the decisions also then based on what they see as the mix of students that they need to have a diverse campus?
Because this country passed a law through Congress, signed by a president, upheld by numerous Supreme Courts, which is Title VI of the 1964 law, and that just makes it plain that in this country, discriminating on the basis of race is no go. You don't do it. Now, if Congress were to pass a law that says we're not going to give preferences for athletes, it would be a strange law, but no such law currently exists. This is about obeying the law.
I see. Okay, so let's go to another caller here. Ellie is calling from Stevens City, Virginia. Ellie, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. I just wanted to call in because I think a lot of the narrative around this case has been saying that Asian Americans don't believe in affirmative action. A lot of people in the Asian American community do believe in affirmative action. I'm an East Asian American woman, and the majority of the plaintiffs in these cases are Chinese American students. And that, you know, they're not underrepresented in the college scene in the slightest. You know, affirmative action really helps Black and brown students in America, which Asian American students sometimes are considered brown students. Pacific Islanders, South Asian, Southeast Asian students, you know, if this is going to give them a leg up, we absolutely owe it to these students to do so. And I think this case is really hurting the overall Asian American community to benefit a few students.
Well, Ellie, thank you so much for your call. Let's get a view from Samantha, who's calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Samantha, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Doesn't involve Harvard, but last year when my daughter was a senior, she applied to Johns Hopkins. And we are white. She was not accepted. Out of curiosity, we did something not exactly ethical, but out of curiosity, she reapplied, just switching her middle name and her first name around. Birth date, grade point average, test scores, extracurriculars, everything was identical. That was the only change. In addition to checking the black box on the application, not only was she accepted into Johns Hopkins, she was also accepted into the Peabody program and offered a scholarship covering half her tuition. Just check the black box. Mm.
Samantha, can I ask you a quick question? And I definitely want to have our guests reflect on your story here about your daughter. But I'm just looking back at this 1978 ruling that the Supreme Court put out. And Peter Wood, earlier in the hour, to be fair to him, he called Justice Powell's decision sort of a fringe decision by one justice on the Supreme Court. But Justice Powell wrote that I'm just going to read a quick excerpt to you, Samantha. He wrote that in choosing among thousands of applicants who are not only admissible academically but have other strong qualities, the committee, in this case Harvard's admissions committee, can use a number of criteria in mind. And then he goes on to say the race of an applicant may tip the balance in their favor, just as geographic origin or a life spent on the farm may tip the balance. A farm boy from Idaho can bring something to Harvard College that a Bostonian cannot offer. Similarly, a black student can bring something that a white person cannot offer, can usually bring. I'm just wondering what your response is to that, since you said your daughter just checked a different race box and got in, even though everything else about her was the same.
Oh, I don't even know how to respond. We also live on a farm, so to hear the, you know, farm people get extra preference, it didn't make any difference. I mean, we were so baffled, and we wanted to tell our friends, but of course we didn't, because what we did, you know, wasn't exactly right. And she did write a letter in declining and said she had chose a different school, so that scholarship could go to someone else. It wasn't like she tied up a scholarship, but everything was identical.
Yeah.
And if you're going to let in one person who has exactly the same grade point average, exactly the same classes, then you need to let someone else in who is exactly the same, because that's really what the best of the best are who should be going to college, not the best of what they want their yearbook picture to look like.
But Samantha, sorry, I don't mean to have you on the air longer than maybe you wanted it to be, but are you implying that you think that someone else who is, you know, genuinely African American, you know, wasn't as qualified and let in? Is that the subtext here? I just want to let you have your say.
I think we, regardless of race, if you aren't as good, you shouldn't go. I mean, she got into MIT with no problem. She's attending MIT and loving it. But you're the best of the best are supposed to go. That's how it used to be. If you came from, I do genuinely feel, okay, I do have empathy for students of all ethnicities, because this includes a lot of different ethnicities that are going to the inner city schools, the schools where they don't have textbooks. They may have 10 for a class of 35, and they don't have places for everyone to sit, and they are definitely have the deck stacked against them and maybe then go to junior college for 2 years.
Yeah.
Get yourself ready to go and then apply. It's unfortunate that they may have to take those steps. I mean, we went out with out a lot of stuff. We live on a farm. We are certainly not wealthy and sacrificed a lot for her to be able to take the classes she needed and do the things she needed.
Well, Samantha, I'm going to take it back from you there, and thank you. Actually, thank you so much for your call and for your extended back and forth with me. I really appreciate it. Nicole Gonoji, respond to, or what do you think about what Samantha just said? She has a case study in her own daughter that all her daughter did was just check a different box of ethnicity and got in when the previous year she hadn't. And to her, that it shows, to her, it feels like it exposes the arbitrary nature or perhaps even the unfair nature of admissions processes.
Sure. So two things really quick. I know we're almost out of time. I think this case is about how do you define merit. And I do think that considering race in the admissions process makes it a more fair process, because people, regardless of socioeconomic status, you know, they start out in different places in life. And I think that a lot of research has shown that certain minority groups, including certain Asian American minority groups, actually sort of start behind the starting line. So even if everyone has exactly the same GPA, test score, extracurricular activities, the fact that someone who has had more disadvantage in their life was able to achieve the same thing makes them someone who is more meritorious. Plus, maybe they add something to diversity that is a plus factor on merit. The second thing I will say is related to what the quote from Justice Powell that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The consideration of race must be narrowly tailored. That is the law of the land. And, you know, it does mean that for equally qualified applicants, it could mean the difference between getting in and not. And the Supreme Court has said that that is okay. We have looked at this in Harvard. The chances of an Asian American student getting in increases by less than 1% if race is not considered. And so I just say that to say that this is a narrowly tailored program. Will it have an effect in a few cases, like in the one for the caller? Yes. But that doesn't make it unconstitutional.
I see. So, Peter Wood, we've got a minute to go here. Then your last thought. I mean, you just heard Nicole Gonoji say, contrary to your assertion that Harvard is discriminating against Asian Americans, that it's narrowly focused enough, their admissions policies, that it shouldn't, she says, it shouldn't qualify as being unconstitutional.
Well, first of all, Samantha from La Crosse, her complaint is really about fairness. And I agree with Nicole that a lot of this comes down to how we define merit. Being of a particular skin color is not any kind of merit. We define merit as something that is partly academic, partly aspirational, but it has absolutely nothing to do with race.
Well, Peter Wood is president of the National Association of Scholars, a nonprofit advocacy network of scholars and citizens that's focused on education. They have filed an amicus brief in this case against Harvard University, and he joined us today from New York. Peter Wood, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Nicole Gonoji, supervising attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice. They represent students who are testifying in support of Harvard University, joining us today from Pasadena, California. Nicole, thank you so much as well.
Thank you so much, Magna.
And by the way, if you go to onpointradio.org, you can hear more of my conversation with Harvard President Larry Bacow. I asked him about legacy admissions as well. It's an interesting response I got. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.